Hello and welcome. Again, my name's Alex Griffin, and if you snuck in a bit late, big welcome from me. We're doing a series at the moment called Wonderful Life. Wonderful Life. It comes from the, it's a verse in John, it's John 10, verse 10, which says that Jesus came so that we can have wonderful life. And as part of that series, we're doing a mini-series, and it's about singleness, relationships, marriage, and sex. There's probably four to this mini-series. This is number three. Already, we talked about a biblical understanding of marriage, and that talk focused on really why did God invent marriage? What's it all for? And I said that the primary reason God invented marriage was to point us towards the relationship that God would wish to have with every one of us. You see, from the beginning of the Bible to the very end, God uses marriage as a way to describe the intimacy, the love, the trust, the friendship, the closeness, the mutual attraction that he would like for us to have in our relationship with him. And it went to great lengths to make it clear as possible as that it's that message behind marriage that is available for all of us, irrespective of whether we are married or not. The second talk looked at singleness, and we saw that neither marriage nor singleness makes us complete. We're complete in God, irrespective of our marital status, and that's because of what God has already done for us. We also saw how sex is portrayed in our society and how it can be very unhelpful, both to married and to single people. It's not that sex is a problem, it's the immorality that has sort of magnetically attached itself to sex. That's the problem. And we saw that when we saw in Jesus, he chose to be single throughout his life. And in doing so, he gave singleness a new standard. And he clearly signaled that singleness was in every way equal in stature to marriage. So that's what we've talked about. Today, what we're going to talk about is something which is really important to maintaining a healthy relationship, and that's communication. We're going to look at the art of talking, how apt that your phone should go off. We're going to look at the art of talking and the art of listening. And the final talk, which will be in a couple of weeks' time, will involve both Karen and myself, and we will look at some more practical aspects of married life, in particular the expression of love and sexual intimacy. And you can perhaps imagine how glad I am to know that my parents will be visiting us that weekend. The chances of that. Anyway, these four talks are designed to be listened to in a big clump. They come as a quad something. We record all of our talks here. I would really encourage you to go to their website, look at the podcasts, and listen to the previous two talks. And if you don't get to hear the final one, then you can hear that as well in time to come. So, today, we're going to be looking at talking and listening. And I'm going to focus this talk specifically to married people. However, my hope is that irrespective of whether you're married or not, that you would find some of this talk of great benefits to you. But I'm focusing it towards married people because I think married people need to hear this more than anyone else. You see, I think that the challenge of having a effective ability to talk and an effective ability to listen is most challenging for people who are married. Or to put it another way, it's often the case that marriage breakdown and divorce stems ultimately from not talking or listening well. And as I've said in time gone by, my job is very much not to make anyone feel guilty if that's your experience. Far from it. In fact, quite the opposite. I'd love to encourage you. But I'd also like to encourage people who may be married now or who may get married at some time in the future. I think this is a really important subject. For most married couples, life can, from time to time, be rather difficult. People who say that their marriage is always wonderful, they never argue, everything is always perfect all the time, are either lying or they're being modest in their disclosure of the hard work that they put into maintaining a healthy marriage. You see, men and women are very different, and that's a good thing. But what that means is that men and women need to work hard at communicating with each other well. I'm going to read you a couple of extracts of diaries, one from a wife and one from a husband. The same, well, they're married, these couple. Just to give you an idea of the differences between men and women. This is her diary extract. "Tonight I thought my husband was acting weird. We made plans to meet at a nice restaurant after dinner. I was shopping with a friend all day long, so I thought he was upset at the fact that I was a bit late, but he made no comment on it. Conversation wasn't flowing, so I suggested that we go somewhere quiet so we could talk. He agreed, but he didn't say very much. I asked him what was wrong, and he said nothing. He said it wasn't my fault and I shouldn't get upset. There's nothing to worry about. On the way home, I told him that I loved him, and he smiled slightly and kept driving. I can't explain his behavior. I don't know why he didn't say, 'I love you too.' When we got home, I felt as though I'd lost him completely, as if he wanted nothing to do with me anymore. And as he sat there quietly and watched TV, he seemed so distant and absent. Finally, with silence all around, I decided to go to bed. And 15 minutes later, he came to bed. I still felt that he was distracted and his thoughts were somewhere else. And as he fell asleep, I cried. I don't know what to do. I'm almost sure his thoughts are with someone else. My life is a disaster." His diary on the same day said this: "Motorcycle won't start. Can't figure out why." And I think that's quite often the case in marriage life, the disparity, the misunderstanding, and the problems that come through ineffective communication. A healthy marriage is absolutely reliant upon effective talking and effective listening between a husband and a wife. If we talked knowing that the person is intent on listening, and if we listen with the intent of understanding the other person, we would have much stronger marriages. Now, when Karen and I were married, when Karen and I went to university, before we were married, mobile phones hadn't been invented, and that meant that we had to rely on letters and cards. And over the years, we wrote each other nearly 350 letters and cards. And you can see them here. We've kept all of them on this table. And most of these letters are very long. They go into many pages, and they capture 7 years of our lives before we were married. And I've got here an extract of one of the first letters that we sent each other. I'll read just a small amount out to you. It says, this is a letter from Karen to me. she wrote this when just after we started going out. I think we were about 16 or 17. And she wrote it when she was in Germany. They had a house as a family in Germany over Christmas time. Dear Alex, for many hours of boredom, you were indeed right. But you were also right about your poems. How anyone has the inspiration to write poetry is beyond me. And the first poem is especially one of those something to think about types. Speaking of thinking, that's something I've had plenty of time to do. Please note the very delicately drawn cartoon in the corner. There it is. But then again, I don't have A-level art. I thought it was appropriate, though, especially after your comments regarding something confinement with only a paintbrush and paint. I think she's talking about a painting that I was doing. Yeah, I remember this now. She's saying it had better be a masterpiece, though. Anyway, and then she goes on and she finishes it with this. I am glad that you shared with me these poems. I could return the favour, but I'm not really talented in that area. I'm sure, though, given time, I could find something else that may or may not interest you. The rest of it is rated 18, so we won't go there. You're not allowed to read any of those letters at all, okay? Now, these letters became a fantastic way for Karen and I to communicate with one another. And actually, you know, in hindsight, looking back, I think it honed our ability to communicate with each other. And it's kind of helped us to stand the test of time, just about. It's benefited us because writing letters means that you are able to communicate without being interrupted. But one might think that a couple, once living together, would find that communication far more easy, far more effective. The problem is that for many people, they lead busy lives and they struggle to find time to talk and listen effectively. Furthermore, we tend to not improve our ability to talk and listen unless we make some very specific decisions to do so. It's not something that many of us are good at doing naturally. So I'd like to mention three things that I think would help all of us to be an effective talker. Here's the first one. Make time to allow conversation to happen. So in recent history, and to some extent this is relevant for us today as well, the social norm, as portrayed by the gossip magazines and popular media, is for husbands to keep their feelings and emotions to themselves, and for wives to tell everyone about their feelings and emotions except their husbands. And I think the story of the two diaries sort of lends itself. I mean, it's humorous, but underlying that, there's an innate truth. Now, I think that it would be too stereotypical for us to sort of say that all men are emotionally stunted and all women are emotionally open, but not with the right person. And I think as time goes on, that stereotype becomes less and less accurate. But regardless of your gender, I would like to say that if you're someone who finds it difficult to discuss your emotions with your spouse, then your homework, okay, is to take steps towards telling your partner how you actually feel, what's on your mind, especially when times are hard. Likewise, if you're the type of person who finds it easy to talk but not really with the person you're married to, then your homework is to ensure that you talk less behind their back and more to their face. I would say that Couples who experience hard times from time to time, maybe such as the death of a child, or financial hardship, the loss of a job perhaps. It's at those times that you really need to ensure that communication goes well. Do you know what? People respond to hard times in a variety of ways, and that's fine. There is no manual that tells us how we should cope with a dying child, for instance. But we need to make space. We need to create an atmosphere whereby we allow each other to voice our thoughts, our feelings, albeit that they may be very, very difficult to say and to hear. In marriage, an effective talker is someone who is able to express their feelings to their husband and wife. The second way, I think, to become an effective talker is to choose the right time to have the conversation. It's not always best to express your thoughts and opinions when you're upset. We tend to say things at that point that inflame argument rather than extinguish disagreement. And I like the phrase, I don't know who wrote it, but it says this, speak when you're angry and you will make the best speech you will ever regret. The Bible also has a lot to mention on this. One example is Proverbs 25, verse 11. It's not on the screen, but I'll read it out here. Like golden apples set in a silver, that's a good thing, is a word spoken at the right time. Wait until you're calm and then talk. For me, it can take up to 2 days. And it's a principle I like to use outside of marriage as well. I mean, in the office, when I get those annoying emails, how tempted I am to immediately rebut it with a fantastic piece of retort, which elevates my brilliance and shrinks them as a person all round. Of course, that's not the best thing to do. It needs for me to take a couple of days out. What I tend to do, actually, is write a draft, get it all out there, don't send it, come back 2 days later, realize it's probably in need of a bit of tweaking before it goes out, and then send it if needs be. When Karen and I disagree and a row looks on the horizon, it's good to have a commercial break. It tends to help the way in which we find resolution. And so in marriage, an effective talker is someone who's able to speak at the right time. And then the third one, what's an effective talker? Is someone who expresses their affections. Now, raising negative comment needs to be done in a timely manner. However, positive affection is something that can be done at almost any time. It's not true that by repeating the words, "I love you," you somehow diminish its value. In fact, the opposite is true. Repeatedly giving affirmation to your husband and wife is rather like a drip in a cave. A couple of drips, nothing really happened. But year after year of these drips, and we see stalagmites starting to form. And actually, we also see stalactites. And the two rocks edge their way together. People get close together with repeated offerings of affection. And I have to say, that's my analogy. I'm really pleased with it, and I've copyrighted it. You're welcome to share, but you must state that it's my idea. In marriage, an effective talker is someone who repeatedly affirms to their spouse regular affection. So look, these are three good ways. There's probably more, okay? That's not the full story, but they're three good ways to start with. So the next question is, having learned the art of becoming a good talker, how do we learn the art of being an excellent listener? On the matter of conversation, most people are better at talking than they are at listening. Steve Covey, I think you pronounce it like that, he puts that point like this. He says, most people do not listen with the intent to understand, they listen with the intent to reply. God, in like mind, puts it like this in Proverbs 18, verse 13. He says, whoever answers before listening is both foolish and shameful. Quite harsh. The Samaritans seek to help, not by giving advice, but by listening. And if you've noticed on there, many of their posters will be, I saw a poster with big ears, you know, nodding in big ears? And, you know, big ears for listening. That's what they like. That's what they like to do. They listen. But before we look at what makes a good listener, I thought it'd be fun if we looked at five profiles of a bad listener. And as I sort of read quite quickly a few statements out, I'd like for you to think not, yeah, this applies to him or her. I'd like to think, is this true of me? Okay? So five profiles of a bad listener. One, the advice giver. The advice giver will say, okay, I know where this is going. What you need to do is this. The interpreter, they would say, now I saw that murder mystery movie you're going to watch tonight. The butler did it. The reassurer, the dog's died, the new hairstyle doesn't work, and you're obviously not going to be able to walk again, but tomorrow's a new day and life can only get better. The rationalizer would say, well, the reason why you can't perform well in bed is probably the result of undiagnosed miscellaneous stress. And then the deflector, they would say, interesting, that reminds me of someone else who did something not very similar, such as... You see, people who say these sorts of things are generally not very good at listening. By contrast, I think that a good listener is someone who gives their full attention. I often find myself listening to Karen and at the same time giving my full attention to the BBC News and calling that multitasking. If you want to be an effective listener, make eye contact and shut up. An effective listener is someone who copes with distractions. Again, I often find myself listening to Karen. I'm making eye contact. I'm not talking. Boxes have been ticked. But what I'm actually thinking about is, what do you call a rock formation where the stalactites and the stalagmite actually meet? If you want to be an effective listener, turn off the radio and actively listen to the words that they are speaking. An effective listener is someone who listens intelligently. Someone might say to you a joke about their life, and you might have that sneaky feeling that under the jovial or perhaps glib remark is a truth there wanting to be found out. If you want to be an effective listener, you might have to do some clever interpretation of what's being said and think through what they might actually mean. An effective listener is someone who does not quickly respond to criticism or make defensive retort. So a person who is emotionally charged may seem incoherent and change their tack midway through a conversation. People who vocalize what they're thinking as they are thinking it need space to form a conclusion without being interrupted halfway through their thinking process. You know what? If you want to be an effective listener, let people finish. It might be that what started as disagreeable ends up as quite amicable without you having to intervene at all. An effective listener is someone who acknowledges spoken feelings. So an initial response that starts with something like, "Okay, I hear what you're saying. It sounds like you've had a really tough day today." That will go down well. It demonstrates that you've actually been listening. And so if you want to be an effective listener, let them know that you've been listening. Lastly, an effective listener is one who only gives advice if required. Most people, I think, value the listener more when they know they're being listened to rather than when the listener offers them advice. See, when Karen comes home, she's a medical doctor and she talks to me about her difficulties in the hospital. She doesn't want me to give her advice. "Well, maybe you should shake the ECG machine and it will come out with better results." No, she doesn't want to hear that. Now, I know that an ECG means electrocardiodiagram. But I don't know what that means, okay? I have no idea. And so for me to offer her advice is just foolish. Was it foolish and shameful? So I don't do that. More often, what Karen wants is not my advice. She just wants to know that I've heard. Coming into land, here's a summary, a conclusion about being an effective listener and an effective talker. Diane Vaughan, she is a sociologist, as I understand, working at Oxford University, has spent 10 years researching reasons for failure in marriage. Fun job. And she concludes in her studies by saying this: in almost every marriage that breaks down, there's a failure of communication. She continues, "It starts with the partner who feels disconnected. At first, he or she will try to hide the discontent, pretend it doesn't exist, or that it will go away. Instead, it grows stronger, and after some time, the initiator will attempt to convey the discontent to the other partner, usually with vague hints or complaints that are almost always ignored or unnoticed." I think that many of the more obvious causes of marital breakdown and divorce, and I'm thinking of arguments, distrust, sexual discontent, adulterous affairs, that sort of stuff, are the inevitable consequence of a prolonged time of poor communication. I think poor communication, a marriage breakdown stems from bad listening and bad talking. And so, married couples, I commend you to be wise with your time. Be honest and gracious to one another. Constantly show affection and listen to what your spouse is saying. I think when we do this, our marriages will be much more enjoyable, much more healthy. that's all I have to say on that. I'd love to pray over all of us. As I hope, as I said, I hope that, you know, even if you're not married, some of this might be useful either now in other contexts or might be useful in time to come. Why don't you stand up and we're just going to ask God to bless us and be with us. And we'll have just a time of ministry. Commonly what we do here now is we'll just, there'll be some worship music in the background, but we'll give God some space to talk to us. Maybe even about what we've just done this talk about, but it might be something completely different. And we will pray for one another as and when you want it. Lord, we come back into your presence, and we just ask for you to bless us now. My blessing, my prayer would be that in this room, and for all the people who I hope will be listening to the talk, that there would be, you know what, I think there will be marriages which are currently on the brink of being really difficult, perhaps even heading for divorce. And that this would prompt a couple to get serious about working hard in the way that they communicate with one another. I think it's a marriage saver. And for many other people as well, in various relationships that we have, be it professional or with a particular special individual, where those relationships are not as healthy as they could be, prompt us, help us to sharpen our ability to both speak well and listen well, because it's good and it's needed. And I would pray that blessing to be upon us, absolutely upon us. I would love for us to be a church known for healthy marriages, healthy, long-lasting relationships. And where we don't just shove stuff under the carpet, but we're real and we're honest with one another, especially in a marriage relationship, that people are honest with one another, and that these things are addressed. I think it's one of the roots of a big problem. And I pray for your Holy Spirit now just to come and fall on us afresh and be with us anew. The wonderful, wonderful thing is there is absolutely nothing that we could do which God cannot forgive and God cannot help us with. And you might have the most catastrophic history ever to be known. God is still more powerful, bigger, stronger, and can overcome everything. And he wants to. And he loves you all the time. He wants your marriage to be fantastic so that marriage is something that all can see and all can know what it's really like to have a good relationship with God. That's where he's taking all of this. So come and minister to us in a personal way and bless us. And I would really, really urge you that if, having heard any of this or anything else we've talked about over the last few weeks, if you feel that there's just stuff in your life that you would really value having a chat with someone about, then I would really urge you to have that chat. Maybe with your life group leader, maybe with a really good, trusted friend who's a mature Christian. But find someone and be that good talker with that person. You're welcome, obviously, to talk to Karen and myself as well. That might be something that you do today. That might be something that you think hard and you do over the next week or two, but don't leave it for long. Don't let it linger, because you'll just forget about it and it will just go on and you'll end up worse than it already is. So may the Holy Spirit bless us. And fall afresh on us. And I happen to think that even when we have good marriages, there are tweaks that God would love to do. Little improvements. Little bits that God could just, alter. Well, we permit you, Lord, to come in our lives and rule and do whatever you think is best in us and through us and for us. Because we trust you and we trust in your wisdom more than we trust in our own. And I would also wish to say, perhaps lastly, if any of this has sort of brought up some bad memories of times in your previous relationships, which are just really difficult, rather than feeling guilt, shame, I would love for you to know that your God is a forgiving God and he absolutely loves you. And he would love, if there's anything which is lingering, any distasteful thing which is still there, he would love just to come and intervene and make it utterly clear that you are beautiful in his sight. And when you say sorry, he does indeed forgive. And so if there's anyone here or anyone listening to this who just feels rotten, then I would just love to say your God is knocking at your door and he's desperate to come and meet with you again, and he's desperate to say, I absolutely love you and I don't care what you've done. What I care about most of all is that we can get back together and that we could work together to restore anything that needs to be restored. Or at least cope with what's gone in the past. So come, Jesus. Come, Holy Spirit, and fill this room and fill our hearts. We love you. Love you.